Welcome, everybody. So glad you're here this week. And this is a really, really special weekend for at least three reasons. One reason is because at this campus, we're having water baptisms. Let's give it up for those who are just water baptized at the VC campus. Way to go. I think we're water baptizing 47 people over our three weekend services this weekend here. And if you're a follower of Jesus and yet you've never been water baptized, that's an important next step. We do this about every 6 weeks. So make sure you pay attention to the bulletin. Get signed up. We'd love to celebrate your water baptism. The second reason this is such a great weekend to be here at the Vineyard is because our Reveal Vineyard family is joining us online. So let's give it up for our Reveal Vineyard family. So glad you guys are part of this service today. And the third reason this is a great weekend is because my son, Luke, who attends this campus, he's actually turning out of his teens and turning 20 years old. So if you see Luke at any of the services, wish Luke a happy birthday. It's hard to believe, you know, when kids grow this fast and now he's going to be 20 years old. Well, you know, we started a brand new series last weekend called Everybody, Nobody, and Anything. Everybody, Nobody, and Anything. And in this series, we're looking at what kind of people we believe God wants us to be here at the Vineyard and what kind of lives we all want to live. And last weekend, we looked at how Jesus created this new community 2,000 years ago called the church. And there had never been a community like this in the history of the world. It was a community where everybody was welcome. Didn't matter what your ethnicity was, didn't matter what your culture was, your gender, your race, your age, your social status, your skin color, your wealth, your education, everybody is welcome. And why is everybody welcome? Because all people matter to God. All people matter to God. Say it out loud. All people matter to God. Pastor Marty, are they saying that out loud at Reveal? If they're not, you need to rebuke them. You Reveal guys, make sure you say it out loud. Everybody, one more time. All people matter to God. Which people matter to God? All people. You guys are paying attention. All right. And then last weekend, we also looked at the fact that there's no us and them with God. No us and them. Yeah, we live in a world that is so divisive these days, don't we? But that is not God's will for the world. And we also looked at how you never know who's just one ask away from following Jesus. You never know who's just one ask away from following Jesus. Jesus came up to a guy named Matthew, and Matthew was a tax collector. And everybody thought that Matthew was a million miles away from God, but all Jesus had to do was invite Matthew to follow him. And Matthew said, "Yes, I'm really hungry for God. I want to follow you." See, you never know who it is in your life who's just one ask away from following Jesus. And that's the kind of community that we want to build at the Vineyard. We are a welcoming community. We're a place where all people not only matter to God, but they matter to us. And then last weekend, we also looked at the fact that once Matthew became a follower of Jesus, Matthew said to himself, "You know, I have some resources. I have some money. I have a house. I could throw a party. And I can invite all my sinner friends and also invite Jesus. And I know that my friends, when they got together with Jesus, Jesus would just do the rest." And I told you that we want every church service here at the Vineyard, at both campuses, Reveal and the VC campus, to be a party like that, to be a Matthew's party. See, we want our lives and our homes to be like a Matthew's party so we can bring people and Jesus together. That is a really core part of who we are as a church. Every weekend, we are throwing a party at both campuses at the Vineyard. And by the way, this is a party where everybody's welcome. No matter what they've done, they're welcome. No matter what they look like, they're welcome. Now, this weekend is going to be a little bit more sobering of a reality. And we're going to talk about this weekend about the fact that we're not only a place where everybody's welcome, but we're also a place where nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. Say it out loud. Nobody's perfect. Let me ask you this. Have you ever done something that you personally were not very good at, but you were doing it with some other people who are like really good at it? They're really good. You're not good at all. Maybe snow skiing, or maybe ice skating, or dancing, or video games. There's a million things that you could name. You know, when I first started playing golf, I started playing golf right after college, which is like 5 or 10 years ago now. And when I first started out, I played with some guys who were really, really good. I mean, like, they were like scratch golfers. And I was just starting out. I mean, I was not only bad, I was horrible. But the thing is, I knew I was bad. I knew I was bad, right? I knew I couldn't compete with those guys. But imagine if I didn't realize that I was a bad golfer. And then when we got done with the round of golf, what if I began offering golf lessons to people as they were coming off the golf course? That would be crazy, wouldn't it? We don't do that, do we? No, as a general rule, if we're bad at something, at least we know we're bad. But it turns out that there's one area of life where people can be really, really suboptimal, but they don't know it. You know what area of life that is? The spiritual area of our life. Where we're at with God. Now, you may not think about yourself as a really spiritual person, but all of us, we have this tendency to think that we are superior to other people spiritually because of maybe our ideology, maybe our lifestyle, maybe our affluence, maybe our intellect, whatever. But we all struggle with this. This is a very human struggle. But the good news is the Vineyard is a place where nobody's perfect. And I believe God wants to do a little surgery in some of our hearts around this fact today. You know, when we start trying to follow Jesus, almost all of us begin thinking things like, well, you know, I'm not very good at following Jesus, but at least I'm better than they are, whoever they is. Well, Jesus actually teaches about this in Luke chapter 18. So if you have a Bible, you have an app, open it up to Luke 18. We're going to study verses 9 to 14. Luke 18, 9 to 14, starting in verse 9. Then Jesus told this story to some who had great confidence in their own righteousness and scorned everyone else. So right off the bat, we know a couple of things about the audience here. The audience thinks they're doing great, right? They have great confidence in their own righteousness. They think they're doing better than other people, which, of course, means that they're deceived. Because in Jesus' eyes, they are doing terrible, but they don't know it. So Jesus is going to give a really edgy talk here, a really edgy talk. This is not going to be the kind of talk where people go up to Jesus afterwards and say, hey, Jesus, can I download that podcast so I can listen to it again later? It's not going to be that kind of talk. And here's the story starting in verse 10. Two men went to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a despised tax collector. Now, everybody hearing this knows who the hero of this story is right away. The Pharisee. The Pharisee is the really good guy. He's devout. He does all the right stuff. The bad guy in the story is the tax collector. Remember, tax collectors collaborated with the Roman Empire. They were corrupt. They were cheaters. Everybody in Israel hated tax collectors. Look what happens next, verse 11. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed this prayer. I thank you, God, that I'm not a sinner like everyone else. For I don't cheat, I don't sin, I don't commit adultery. I'm certainly not like that tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give you a tenth of my income. Now this is loaded with all kinds of details that the original hearers would have picked up on right away. First of all, it says, the Pharisee stood by himself. Why did he do that? He did that because he didn't want to get contaminated by those who were unclean around him. See, in that day, to be ritually clean was an expression of devotion to God. And the Pharisees, they worked really hard at that. For example, if you touched anybody who was unclean, like a Gentile, meaning a non-Jew, or you touched a leper, or you touched a woman, or you touched a sinner, or you touched a tax collector, that would make you unclean. So distancing yourself from other people was one of the ways that you proclaimed your devotion to God. At least that's the way that the Pharisees thought about it. So the Pharisee distances himself from other people, not only physically, but spiritually, emotionally, and personally. And the Pharisee's attitude is, God, thank you so much that I'm not like them. Now, how does the Pharisee know that he's doing really well spiritually? Is it because of his inner character? No. It's all about the things he does outwardly. For example, he says, I fast twice a week. Now, if you do the math, well, first of all, let me say this. In the Old Testament, the Israelites were commanded by God to fast one day a year. It was called the Day of Atonement or Yom Kippur. This guy fasted 2 days a week. If you do the math, 52 weeks in a year, 2 days a week, he fasted 104 days in a year. That means he had 103 days of extra credit. I mean, this guy was like a spiritual overachiever. And then he says, and I give you a tenth of my income. Now, in the Bible, that's called tithing. And tithing was a really big deal in the Old Testament. It's still a big deal now, but it was a really big deal in the Old Testament. And the rabbis would debate about the different parts of tithing. They would say things like, well, do you have to tithe on products where the farmers already tithed on them? Things like herbs and mint and seed and so on. You know, it became kind of like our tax code today. It can become really complex because of all the deductions. But this guy, he takes no deductions at all. He's like a flat rate voluntary tither. And he would be very happy if everybody could see his tithe publicly. He's really proud about all this. And again, you may not be religious at all. You may not be spiritual at all. But all of us have a way of thinking, I'm doing better spiritually than those guys. It's very universal. That is the Pharisee in this story. And then there's the tax collector. Tax collector is a loser. Tax collector is a failure. He's a misfit. Look at it says in verse 13. But the tax collector stood at a distance and dared not even lift his eyes to heaven as he prayed. Instead, he beat his chest in sorrow, saying, "Oh God, be merciful to me, for I am a sinner." So the tax collector also separates himself. It says he stood at a distance as well. But with him, it's not because he was looking down on everybody else. It's because he realizes how incredibly messed up his life is. In fact, he realizes that his life is so messed up that if God is an incredibly generous and incredibly merciful, then he's going to be in real trouble. And this bears so heavily on him that Jesus says he won't even look up to heaven. He won't even look up toward God. You know, there's something inside of us as human beings that when we feel guilty, we don't even want to make eye contact with the person that we feel guilty about. You know, if you lied to somebody or you've cheated somebody or hurt somebody, you don't even want to look them in the face, do you? And this is so deep that it's even true with dogs. How many of you have a dog? Raise your hand. Those of you at Reveal, raise your hand if you have a dog. How many of you have a dog? You can be proud of it. Some of you are like, I don't know if I want to claim that dog. So we have some dog lovers. We have a dog. Her name is Candy. She's a Maltipoo. And Candy is a really friendly dog. And the best thing about Candy is that Candy never barks. And that is a huge blessing from God. Now, we did have her vocal cords taken out when she was young. No, I'm teasing. But Candy is the kind of dog who loves to make eye contact. Well, he used to love to make eye contact. Now she has diabetes and she's gone blind, so she can't really make eye contact. But she would come up to you and look you in the face, just begging for you to pet her. But when Candy would do something bad, she would not look you in the face. In fact, if she had done something really bad, like poop or pee on our stairs, which she oftentimes does when she feels like we're not giving her enough attention. She is a little spiteful dog, that dog. We love her to death, but she's spiteful. But when she has done something bad, she won't come up and look you in the face. In fact, she goes right into her kennel, right into her crate. Dogs are like that. Dogs have this tender conscience that when they've done something wrong, they don't want to look you in the face. Cats never look you in the face. You know why? Because they're trying to think up ways to kill you. That's why cats never look you in the face. So this tax collector, he won't even look up toward heaven. And then it says this. Instead, he beat his chest in sorrow. See, in the ancient world, that was a really extreme expression of humiliation or sorrow. And it was considered such an extreme expression of humiliation or sorrow that men were generally too proud to ever do this. Usually it was only women who would do this. And it's only mentioned one other time in the entire New Testament, and that's when Jesus died on a cross. When Jesus was crucified, no other expression was adequate to indicate the depth of how bad that was. And so people beat their chest. And this is the guy's prayer. Oh God, be merciful to me, for I am a sinner. Again, the people listening to this story, they're thinking to themselves, yeah, that's about right. That's what you would expect from a tax collector. But then comes the twist in the story that nobody sees coming. Look at Jesus says in verse 14, I tell you, this sinner, not the Pharisee, returned home justified before God. Why? Because those who exalt themselves will be humbled, but those who humble themselves will be exalted. Everybody's jaw hit the floor. Really, Jesus? The tax collector? See, these people all thought they knew what it was to be a good person. And again, every human being, whether you're religious or not, we all think we know what it means to be a good person. And we all know there's some really bad people out there. But we also have a way of exonerating ourselves from the bad people list. Now, in this story, between the Pharisee and the tax collector, I want us to do a little righteousness audit to see which of these two guys would seem more righteous. So, out of the Pharisee and the tax collector, who do you think read the Bible more often? Pharisee by far. Who do you think prayed more often? Pharisee by far. Who do you think knew the Bible better? Pharisee by far. Who had a better spiritual reputation with the community? Pharisee by far. Who went to church or synagogue way more often? Pharisee. Who do you think was more aware of their desperate need for God? Tax collector. Now, what does Jesus call that? He says, that's humility. Not pretending. Not hiding. And we have a phrase for that. You know, when people get really humble, we call it keeping it real. Keeping it real. We just say, keep it real, man. Don't pretend like you're someone you're not. So Jesus says, I'm going to start this new community called the church. And it's going to be a place where everybody's welcome. Jew, Gentile, slave, free, male, female, everybody's welcome. And Jesus says, and it's also going to be a place where nobody's perfect. And that means, Jesus says, that nobody can come who's just pretending. Nobody can come who's acting like they have it all together. Nobody can come who says, you know, I don't really have any problems. And you know why that's so important? Because there's incredible freedom that comes when you don't have to hide anymore. When you don't have to pretend anymore. And the truth is, healing comes when you're known. Sickness remains when you hide. And we live in a world where we're taught to hide all the time. We're taught that the world is for one group of people, and it's a group of people called the winners. And so if you want to be a winner and you want to be welcomed, then you have to be a winner. And if you're not a winner, then you need to fake it till you make it. But Jesus starts this new community called the church. And it's not a place for winners. It's a place for losers. It's a place for broken people and sinners and misfits and outcasts and people on the margins. And it's a place for people who have humbled themselves because they know how much they need God. Let me ask you, is that you? Do you realize how much you need God? Have you humbled yourself in that fashion? You know, the world, if you want to be welcomed by the world, then you need to convince everybody that you're as rich as Jeff Bezos, as smart as Albert Einstein, as strong as Andre the Giant, and as sexy as Brad Pitt. Or we could have put a picture of me up there if you wanted, but Brad Pitt. But Jesus starts this new community called the church where, listen to this, you can be as strong as Jeff Bezos and as smart as Andre the Giant and as sexy as Albert Einstein and not resemble Brad Pitt in any way whatsoever. And if you're that kind of person, you know what Jesus says to you? He says, you're my kind of person. If that's what you're like, you're my kind of person. And the turning point in this story is when this loser, this tax collector, says from his heart, God, be merciful to me, for I'm a sinner. And what he's really saying is, God, I've been doing my life, my way for a long time, and my way is no good. And so, God, I want to surrender to you, and I want to follow your way of life from now on. And that's the kind of place the church is supposed to be. The church is supposed to be a place where nobody's perfect. It's supposed to be a place where everybody says, I know I have all kinds of issues and I need help. And that's why the church is a different community from any other community in the history of the world. See, Jesus knows that only when we're being real, no mask, no pretending, no hiding, can we really be loved. I want to read to you part of a children's story that we used to read to our kids called The Velveteen Rabbit. I know some of you parents have read that to your kids. If you don't know the story, it's a story of a little toy rabbit made of velveteen. Not expensive, not impressive, but this rabbit loved this little boy that he belonged to. And he hears in the nursery one day that it's possible for a little toy like him to maybe become real. And so he asks the skin horse about this. And it goes like this. What is real? Asked the rabbit one day. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you're made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes, said the skin horse, because he was always truthful. But when you're real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up? Or does it hurt bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to people who break easily or have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you're real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. Let me stop there for a moment. So Jesus begins this community 2,000 years ago called the church, where people could be real, and they could be loved. And some people didn't understand. But when people did, this strange power got released inside of them. This strange freedom came upon them. Where people like tax collectors would stand up in the temple and say, oh God, have mercy on me, for I'm a sinner. And you know what those same kind of things, they can and they do still happen today? You know, people come to a community like the Vineyard, and after a little while, they begin to get real. And they begin to feel loved. And a new power gets released inside of them. And a new freedom gets released in their life. And God begins to change them from the inside out. But I want you to know, that kind of thing only happens in a community where people are willing to get real. Are you willing to get real? You know, in the story of the Velveteen Rabbit, toward the end, it looks really dark. The rabbit belongs to this boy, and he loves this boy, but the boy gets really, really sick. He gets scarlet fever, and it looks like the boy's going to die. But that little rabbit just keeps whispering to the little boy, stays with the little boy the whole time, and just loves him back to recovery. But a doctor comes to the nursery, and the doctor doesn't understand. And he sees this little Velveteen Rabbit, and he says something like, "That's just a mess of germs. It needs to be thrown away and burned." The rabbit is so sad, he says, "Of what use was it to be loved and to lose one's beauty and become real if it all ended like this?" But then kind of a higher power comes to that little rabbit and says something like, "No, this is not the end. This is just the beginning. You're going to be made real." And the Velveteen Rabbit says, "Wasn't I real before?" And he's told, "You were real to the boy because he loves you, but now you'll be real to everybody." You know, once there was a man, there was a teacher, there was a rabbi, and he came to earth. And he taught like nobody had ever taught. And he lived like nobody had ever lived. And he loved like nobody had ever loved. Nobody had ever seen a rabbi who had loved the kind of people that Jesus would love. This rabbi would love prostitutes and Gentiles and Samaritans and lepers. And he even loved tax collectors. And this made the, quote, good people, you know, the superior people, the righteous people, it made them really mad. And so they wanted to hurt him. But this man didn't mind being hurt because he didn't break easily. So these people finally decided that they were going to kill him. And so they hung him on a cross until he was dead. And they put his body in a tomb and they rolled a stone over the tomb. And the disciples were devastated. And they said, "What's the use? What's the use of being loved and losing one's beauty and become real if it all ends like this?" And then the Father came on the third day and he said, "No, this is not the end. This is only the beginning." And he rolled away the stone and he raised up his son from the dead. And Jesus came out of the tomb. And he was real. Jesus was more alive and more real than any human being who has ever lived. And you know what? If you'll let him, he'll make you real too. He'll make you real too. Jesus can make you real like God always intended you to be real. But you have to humble yourself for that to happen. And I want to give you an opportunity to do that right now. I want to give you an opportunity for you to say to God, "God, I'm one of those not perfect people." We're going to have a time of prayer and worship. And I invite anybody who wants to, at both campuses, to come to the altar. Maybe kneel down, pray. Maybe pray like the tax collector prayed. "Oh God, have mercy on me, for I'm a sinner. I'm so far from perfect." See, there's freedom that comes to people when they admit, "I'm not one of the perfect ones." There's a power that gets released inside of you. And maybe there's something specific that you need to do business with God about. But I encourage you to come to the front, humble yourself, ask for God's mercy upon you, because you are not one of the perfect ones. The band's going to play a song. You come and pray. I'll come back and close the service here at the VC campus, and Pastor Marty will come back and close the service at the Reveal campus. Why don't you all stand?